All right, we told you we were going to have Jay Harnack on, the superintendent of schools for school district number one. That's, of course, the greater Pinedale area, and he is here. Hey, good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, we're glad to have you here on KPIN Radio. We're going to talk about several different subjects, but, you know, Jay, the big hot subject right now that I'm getting lots of phone calls and emails on is Senate File 104. And what Senate File 104 does in our state legislature is basically redefines the duties of the superintendent of public instruction, which right now that position is held by Cindy Hill.
Right.
And kind of makes it more of a ceremonial position. And then the what presently is the superintendent's role is given to a new person appointed by the governor called the, I think, director of education.
Right.
And what I'm hearing from a lot of people is, whoa, isn't that basically something that should be done through a constitutional amendment? Should we really be making a huge change like that at the legislative level? I'm just wondering what you're hearing about the Senate File 104.
You know, I'm hearing probably much of the same conversation that you are. I'm hearing both sides of the story. You know, there's been a lot in the newspapers about what's going on at the Department of Education, about efficiency, about the relationships with legislators, among other things, concerns related to that. And then related to Senate File 104, I'm sort of hearing concerns as related to, you know, this is an elected position. The voters get a say in who that person is and what their qualifications are. Is this taking a role that citizens have in education away from them? So it's a pretty interesting study in government and politics, that's for sure. I haven't heard – I do know that it passed on first reading from the Senate Education Committee, so it's going to be filed and move forward. So other than that, I probably know about as much as any person who's been following it well in the newspaper, and that's just that right now the discussion is, like you said, to make the position, and I think ceremonial might be the right term. I don't know what that would mean. I guess if I had any concerns, one of the things we've heard from the state repeatedly, legislators and the governor and our elected officials, is that, you know, they're projecting lower revenues from the state and that saving money is at a premium. And one of the questions I have is how does this save us money if we take all the duties and responsibilities of the state superintendent of instruction and we move it to a new department and a new director, yet we continue to pay the elected state superintendent a salary. We've sort of duplicated, and it's certainly not saving us any money. So I'm just sort of like most people, waiting to see what the outcome is, but I'd like to find one that's efficient for education and that would, you know, provide access for school districts in terms of building capacity and helping us meet the challenges of the future.
Well, that bill actually has been through two committee hearings. Now, that's unusual because normally they just go through one on each side of the Capitol.
Right.
But it started out in the Senate Education Committee, passed unanimously 5-0. And then after hitting the floor of the Senate, it got sent to the Appropriations Committee for the very thing you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
That this bill is going to require additional money to basically duplicate, you know, funding two different people and their staff.
Yeah.
So because of that, it was sent to Appropriations. It passed the Appropriations Committee 4-1. The one dissenting vote was Senator Kurt Meyer. But the bill now is back in the Senate. And again, for people that have a feeling one way or the other on this, there is the hotline that you can call and register your preference. And this will be delivered to all senators and all representatives that serve all or part of Sublette County is how it works. And that number is 1-866-YO-VOTE. So it's toll-free number 1-866-WYO-VOTE. And just tell them whether you support Senate File 104 or you oppose Senate File 104. That'll go to all of our senators and reps.
Well, from an operational standpoint, one of the concerns that we have is the Department of Education does a tremendous amount of work in terms of the compliance issues that you know, that we deal with in terms of monitoring grants that we receive from the state, in terms of, you know, providing us documentation for accreditation, for our special ed programs, for many of those things. And where school districts don't want to be is questioning, who am I talking to? You know, am I talking to the director? Or am I supposed to be working through the superintendent's agency? Am I on this side or am I on that side? We don't want to be confused about where we're supposed to, you know, where we're supposed to go to get information and with whom we're supposed to work to resolve issues. And that's my primary concern, is with a sort of a parallel programs there that, you know, districts could find themselves, you know, in gridlock to a certain degree, not knowing who's in charge of what.
Well, a lot of what I'm hearing is whether Cindy Hill is or is not doing what some people want her to do or not to do. This is a major overhaul in the structure of the government of the state of Wyoming. And regardless of who holds that position, should this really be done by the legislature, or being the state constitution calls for a superintendent of public instruction, should this be done through a constitutional amendment? That's an issue I'm hearing from a lot of people.
And I think that's a great question that somewhere during this process I hope they answer. I really do. And part of the issue for school districts is, you know, to have this sort of overhaul take place when we're facing a new and unknown to large degree accountability system. So for districts, I think there's probably a you know, fair amount of anxiety over what the outcome will be, because prior to this happening, you know, the biggest thing on our radar was, what's the new accountability system going to look like? And the Department of Education, it was their responsibility to do that work, to determine what the accountability system is going to look like. Now we don't know if it's going to be done by the State Board of Education. We don't know if it's going to be done by the existing WDE, or if it's going to be done by this new organization. And so, you know, there's a lot of work on the school district end to meet the requirements of the accountability system, and it takes time to do that work. And if we don't know who's going to do it, when it'll be done, or what the direction's going to be, it certainly puts us in limbo for much longer than we'd wish to be.
Well, Jay, I know some people don't even know that there is a State Board of Education,
mm-hmm.
and something I'm going to admit, I don't even know this. How does the State Board of Education get chosen?
To the best of my knowledge, they're appointed by the governor. Now, I don't, to be honest with you, Bob, I don't know if I know that answer 100% either. I'm not exactly sure, to be honest with you, what exactly their role is. And I think it's in flux right now. During the past couple of months, I've been hearing that their role is going to be greatly expanded. There was a lot of discussion that many of the duties and responsibilities of the Department of Education were going to be shifted to the State Board of Education, primarily in terms of accountability. But now, with the potential creation of a new department, or maybe just a new director to take over the existing department, I don't even know the answer to that. I don't know what their duties and responsibilities are going to be. I think one of the things that, again, that school districts hope that comes out of this is a clear definition of who does what, and you know, what they'll be doing with districts in the near future.
Well, if there's something I'm hearing from the people of Pinedale, it's a desire to have local control of our schools. In other words, we've never had a superintendent that I'm aware of that has the approval that you have, Jay, and I mean that sincerely. People are very, very happy with what you're doing with the school.
Well, thank you.
But what they're wondering is, does the state step in and say, no, Jay, you can't do this, we're going to do it this way, or do the feds step in and tell you, no, we can't do it this way?
Well, we have a little bit of both going on, and I don't know that they're saying, no, you can't do it this way. It's more in terms of, you have to meet these standards and practices, or meet these requirements to make AYP. What I will say related to your statement is, over the past, 5 or 10 years, there's been a tremendous erosion of local control. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It's happening, I think, in many states. It's happening from the federal level down. In Wyoming, you know, this is my third year here, even in that short time span, I think that there's a lot of local control that's being transferred up to statutory control, legislative control. So, you know, right or wrong, I do truly believe in local control. I think the best decisions are made by people closest to the levels of government. I think our board has done a tremendous job in guiding our school district. I think our student achievement rates show that they've, you know, gone through a good decision-making process. I think later we're going to talk a little bit about strategic planning. I think that's a large part of it. But, you know, when you begin to dictate at the state and federal level, you begin to paint with a really broad brush. And we've all learned that the one-size-fits-all approach that came with No Child Left Behind just doesn't work. And that's really, I think, sort of at the crossroads of many of these discussions.
And you're probably hearing the same thing that I'm hearing, and that is that the people here want local control of their schools.
And I would agree 100% with that.
Well, tell you what, we've been talking a little bit about the Senate File 104, and people might want to comment on that, the one that would basically restructure the way the state takes control of education by removing it from the elected position and turning it over to an appointed position. But there is another bill with the same number, only it's House Bill 104, and this can get confused because they're both very hot issues. A Senate
right.
file, they're called files in the Senate here.
Yes.
Senate File 104 is the one that would basically take the authority away from our elected superintendent of public instruction. House Bill 104 basically says if the feds come to Wyoming to take your guns away from you, Wyoming won't let them. Now, that's the Bob Rule paraphrase.
Right.
But that's a totally separate bill. But on the other hand, that's another one that people are very interested in, many times taking the opposite position on this one. So House Bill 104 says basically that we don't want the feds taking our guns away from us. So don't get House Bill 104.
Yeah, don't call me about that one.
And Senate File 104, two different ones. But, you know, it does bring up the topic, though, of, you know, we had the horrible incident in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And as last time we talked to you, you mentioned we don't want to go into details on the air because we don't want to tip off anybody that
right.
has got bad intentions. But you do basically have plans in place to respond to such a thing should it ever come here.
We do, and we train in those frequently. I mean, some the details that we can release, and, you know, we're not talking out of school, as it were, because all schools do this, I think. But, you know, we have a crisis management plan that covers a broad range of crisis issues. I mean, it's from as small as, you know, losing power or a gas leak to this type of incident that happened in Connecticut. As a part of that, we have what we call emergency response manuals, which are specific to the individual crisis events. We do have a procedure to deal with active shooters. We train on an annual basis and more than an annual basis, on a regular basis probably is more accurate, with local law enforcement. The sheriff's deputies train in our buildings. We have some scheduled. We've had some already this year. We have more coming up in the spring. They train in our BOCES building. They train alongside, you know, our district personnel. We're taking steps to add more security measures on our doors. And as most people know, we've added a tremendous number of cameras in the district to help maintain security. So yeah, we take it very seriously. We did before this event. You know, every time we have one of these events, there's sort of a renewed interest in what schools are doing, and I feel very confident in the steps we've taken to you know mitigate that risk. The reality is, it's probably not what you want to hear from your district superintendent, but if someone is as well armed as that person was and has those intentions, is the school situated to really prevent that? Probably not, in all reality. But we do everything in our power to be prepared to prevent it, to protect our students if it does happen, and involve law enforcement to get it stopped as fast as we can.
Now, we know that your school campus is a no-gun area.
It is.
And, of course, people are going to say, yeah, what that means is law-abiding citizens can't pack guns, but the bad guys can because they don't go by the rules. Has there been any talk about concealed carry on the campus?
There, I have seen proposed legislation I'm sorry that I don't have the file or the bill number, but I have seen proposed legislation that would allow conceal carry on school property. It makes an exception. I know, you know, if you have a, I personally have a concealed carry permit, and on the back of my card it lists those exceptions where you can, you cannot conceal carry, and schools are one of those exceptions. To the best of my knowledge, this particular legislation exempts that. Now, what I don't know about the legislation is, does it provide the school district with the ability to then, as an employer per se, make modifications? So it would, as I understand it, it would allow, for example, you know, Bob, if you had a concealed carry permit and you wanted to come to a basketball game, then you could conceal carry into the basketball game, the sporting event. If you come to parent-teacher conference, then adults would be allowed with concealed carry permits to do that. What we are trying to understand about the legislation and explore is, how does that apply to district staff, and does the district have latitude in defining what that looks like?
Yeah. And, of course, now in Wyoming, you don't even need a concealed carry permit to carry concealed. That changed last year. As a result, a lot of people are not going to be getting concealed carry permits because they don't need them. So I guess we're going to have to go look up this piece of legislation and see if you actually need a concealed carry permit in a state where the permit typically is not needed.
Yes. As I understand it, you know, I do know that the law changed. So now in Wyoming, as I understand, you can conceal carry without the permit. This would not make an exception to that law. It just says if you are a cardholder and you have the permit. So I think it would sort of be kind of middle ground in between the broad, as I understand it again, the broad legislation that says anyone in Wyoming that's, you know, not a felon, et cetera, can conceal carry. But it would only open it up to those who have taken the steps to obtain the card.
Well, let me just shift gears for a second and talk about our school calendar. We recently talked to you about the fact that there's so many extracurricular activities on Friday afternoon, kids missing classes. I know that firsthand. I've got a kid in the high school. And you've got the problem of, oh, wow, we've got a test coming up. I've got to miss the classroom instruction because there's a sporting event Friday afternoon. Has the new schedule where the kids basically get the afternoons off on Friday is, I mean, that's just paraphrasing it.
Sure.
Has that taken effect, and how does it work?
Okay, the schedule was approved by the board at the January meeting. So it's a two-year calendar. So we've approved a calendar for 2013-14 and 2014-15. And just, you know, sometimes there's some misinformation that gets out there. So it is an early release day. It would be early release at 1:30 for grades 6 through 12 and 1:55 for grades K through 5. I do want to point out, though, that it's not an early release for teachers. Teachers are going to continue to work the full day, and that release time really is designed for them to address a tremendous workload that's come about in the past year or so as a result of having to adopt the Common Core, the accountability system, you know, our efforts to integrate technology. So realistically, the thought process behind the calendar is more about providing some collaborative work time for our teachers, because when you adopt broad-scale curriculum changes, you know, not only does a teacher have to work to develop, you know, that new curriculum, but they have to align it with the teacher below them, the teacher above them, and that's a tremendous amount of work. And really, when you think about an elementary teacher, for example, they teach all the subjects. So if you're adopting brand new Common Core standards, the workload is really substantial, and we want to provide them the time to do that. There is an added secondary benefit that you talked about. Wyoming is very unique in the way we run activities. You and I were having a conversation before we came on the air. You know, I'm from Illinois and you're from Virginia. You know, a long travel time to a basketball game was 30 minutes. I mean, that's about as far as we went, and you found everybody in your conference 30 minutes away. Well,
yeah, when I was in high school, the next basketball team was probably 7 miles down the road.
Yeah.
And of course, here in Wyoming, you can travel 50 miles in any direction and you still haven't got to the next city.
Yeah. Two, three, 4 hour bus rides are common. We have overnight trips, something we didn't have in other states. So, you know, it's been our focus to maintain the extracurricular role where we think it should be as an extension of the classroom. But the reality is that it has an impact on instruction in Wyoming that's unique and probably not found in many other states, that unless they're rural like we are. So the reality is that we find on Fridays we have a lot of kids gone for activities. And if we compare the teacher collaboration time with a period of time when we have high student absences, in effect, we sort of kill two birds with one stone. There was some concern that the time off for extracurricular activities was driving the discussion, and that's just simply not true. It's more about providing teachers with time to improve their instruction and put a guaranteed and viable curriculum in place that we think will continue to move our student achievement levels forward.
Now, how does this work on Friday? Do you just punt the afternoon classes? Do you compress all the classes to shorter time periods? How does this work?
Well, there's a couple options, and that'll be up to the individual buildings. They're working on that currently. I'm a former high school principal, so I can give you a couple examples. One option is that you just take all the classes instead of being, 48 minutes in length, they're maybe, 40 minutes in length. So you just compress them all, you shorten them, and every class meets. Another thing that you can do is that you can have sort of block those Fridays and have a sort of a modified schedule where on those Fridays you might have periods 1, 3, and 5, but now they're double blocked, so they have maybe 60 minutes, and teachers can do activities and experiments that they typically would have a difficult time doing in our regular 5-minute period. And then you can do a combination of both. And when a high school I was at, we had this some release time during 1 year, and we did much of that. We would have a compressed schedule 1 week so all the teachers could see their kids, and then we would have a block, and then we'd have the second block, and then we'd go back to the compressed.
Oh, so it could be a little of all of the above.
Yeah.
Now, I assume that if you have a Friday where you're having periods 1, 3, and 5 meeting, then next Friday you have 2, 4, and 6 meeting or something.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the goal is that, and that wouldn't be a tough transition for us because we've had a block schedule in the past. Many of our kids are familiar with that. And realistically, I think there's some real value in it for our teachers, and they have some projects where the kids need to work together, and it takes some extended time. And if they just know that they have that block coming forward, they can make great use of that time.
Now, for some families who have kids in extracurricular activities, this is wonderful because they're able to go to their extracurricular activities without missing academic instruction.
Yes.
But for the families that the kids are not in extracurricular activities, and frankly, the families are kind of glad they're in school, you might say.
You bet.
What's the impact on them that the kids get turned loose early?
Well, one of the things that probably drove a lot of discussion for our Board of Trustees in this is exactly what you're talking about. Those kids aren't going to miss any instruction, but there's that period of time that they're out of school that they weren't previously. Essentially, it comes up to somewhere around an hour or more in any given, day, hour and a half. And so really what we're doing is, as most people know, we have a very close working relationship with both the BOCES and the PAC. And right, we spoke to them before we brought the calendar forward and asked them, do you think you have the capacity to put forward programs, enrichment, and recreational activities for kids? And would you be able to handle the capacity for students who need to go to these programs, maybe because nobody's going to be home to watch them? And the response that we got was, yes, absolutely, we can fill that role. So currently the PAC and the BOCES are working on programs to fill that role. We have early release days throughout the year in this calendar, and they've been doing that for us. They fill that role when we have those early release days.
How does that work for a child whose parents have not enrolled him into membership in PAC?
That's something that typically what they'll do is that there's a nominal fee for that, and maybe that they make the decision that there's no fee. I think that's something that the PAC board will have to decide, and it's one of the things that that we hope to work with them to solve, to make sure that those kids have a place to go, a safe place to go, and good activities to do, And then BOCES is the same way. I mean, BOCES is kind of on a per fee basis, but you know, one of the things that we'll try to do is try to gauge how many students are going to be there. And you know, the other nice thing is the after school program that was at the elementary school is now located in our BOCES building. So all our programs are centrally located. And the other thing that, you know, that we are looking at trying to do, something that we don't have an opportunity to do now, is to use that time to provide academic assistance for students. You know, the majority of our teachers are going to be engaged in professional development activities and curriculum work and things of that nature. But through the use of paraprofessionals or a rotation with teachers, it's a great opportunity for us to provide academic assistance for students who are struggling, for students that might happen to be gone for athletics and other opportunities like that.
Well, tell you what, before we wrap up here, I want to take some time to talk a little bit about strategic planning. We did have an item on our newscast this morning about an upcoming meeting. Let's go ahead and talk about that.
We have our strategic planning process. It's going to come up. It's going to start on January 28th. It starts at 6 p.m. at Pinedale Elementary School. Anybody that wants to participate, you can go online to the website, and there's an invitation there with a link you can click on, and basically it opens a form, and you just put in your contact information. But really, the strategic planning process is the process we go through to set the direction and choose the goals for the district for really the next 3 years. It's kind of a 3-year process, but one out of every 3 years, we really expand the process. We ask people from the community to come in, participate in the process. We involve students and parents and community members and anyone that's interested, really. We do a lot of committee work. We look at a lot of data from the school. We look at our processes, what we do, what we can do to get better. And really, we just want to get as many people in the community involved as we can. It's an open conversation about the school, what we do well, what we don't do well, what we need to do to improve. And then really the process is we work through some committee work and we come up with some goals that say, okay, for the next 3 years, this is going to be some of the primary focus of the school district. And it's really great to have the input from parents and community members and to help us choose that direction. And what's important about it is, you know, once it goes on the strategic plan, we're very focused about seeing improvement in those areas. And I can tell you in the past, we've had it, one of the strategic planning goals was to improve the ACT scores at the high school, and we've seen tremendous growth. So if it goes on in the plan, then district resources, time, energy, and effort from our staff are focused on those goals, and it really makes a big difference in where the district's going to go and what it's going to look like, 3 years from now.
All right, now, is this a meeting that you just show up at, or should they go online and sign up first?
You can. You can just walk in the door, and we'll be more than glad to put you on a committee. I would ask that you go onto our website or our Facebook page. You can find the link there and fill out the contact form, because really I'm going to start disseminating information about the process, and I'm going to start assigning people to committees. That happens randomly, but we're going to start assigning people to committees. And so I will want to get that information out to people either by email or by phone. So if I've got your contact information, then, you know, you're going to go to the meeting more informed and have a better idea of what's going on. But if you don't have time or you're not sure, and then at the last moment you decide you want to, absolutely, you can just walk through the door and we'll put you to work helping us move forward. And, again, it would be Monday, January 28th, 6 p.m. at Pinedale Elementary School.
And that's the new elementary school, just
it
for
is.
Clarity.
Yes.
All right. Well, Jay, appreciate you coming by the radio station. Again, your website is, let me see if I have it memorized. It's pinedaleschools.org.
That's
right?
Correct. Yep.
Pinedaleschools.org. And that is a great website, too. I have found it to be so user-friendly and informative. There's a lot of material there.
Well, as to sort of drive home my point, improving the website was a strategic planning goal that came, I think, the first year that I came here. People said, I don't know if anybody remembers the old website, but they said, boy, there's not enough information on there. It's not user-friendly. And so improving the district website and putting more information that parents need on there was a strategic planning goal. So I'm glad to hear that that you're finding it useful, and hopefully we'll continue to improve upon that.
Something else you'll find on that website is this interview.
That's right.
As soon as we get it posted.
That's right.
All right, Jay, thank you so much for coming by. Jay Harnack, the superintendent of schools for School District Number 1. That's the greater Pinedale area. Look forward to seeing you again in the near future.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Jay.
KPIN Pinedale.